powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, let's talk draft with Nick Baumgartner, who's a senior writer at The Athletic. Nick, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Fantastic. I was actually just reading a column of yours on The Athletic. You guys can go check that out, about how the first wave of free agency is impacting the draft. I am guessing that is primarily with quarterback. Is that where you most saw those changes?
Yeah, I mean, so much rided on Kirk Cousins, right? I think he was kind of the pin that we were waiting to pull. And then once that happened, you know, you saw immediately what Minnesota's plan became, right? So I think that a lot of the free agency pins, you know, were sort of dictated by who made moves at quarterback, who didn't make moves at quarterback, and who sort of crossed that off their list. And even if that was a backup, or even if that was like Pittsburgh, right, addressing it with Justin Fields, you guys are there in Seattle as well. So, I mean, like, it didn't matter what it was. It was just who was going to address quarterback, given the fact that this class is really deep, and, you know, we kind of knew it was.
Nick, obviously quarterbacks get all the love, they're the face of franchises, but I want to focus on a different position. Is there a position that is deeper than people think and that you feel should be getting more love when it comes to this draft coming up?
Yeah, center, actually, which is rare. We don't really say that often, and I think it's a good year for that. Center has been, you know, we talk a lot about the offensive tackles, and this is probably that's the deepest spot, I think, maybe in the draft, but center this year is really, really good. I think there's, you know, two guys, one for sure, Jackson Powers Johnson from Oregon, who I think is a for sure first round pick. I would say probably maybe two, Zach Frazier from West Virginia, depending on maybe medicals, could be another. And then you've got Cedric Van Perren, Tanner Bordellini from Wisconsin, Dylan McMahon, NC State. You know, it goes on and on. You've got guys that could go, I think there could be a little run on them, you know, on day two somewhere, in the, somewhere along the lines, because there's so many teams that need a center this year, too. I think it's Seattle's another one that's still trying to get it solved, right? So there's a lot of teams all over the league that it's either you're looking at a guy that's either about to retire or maybe in a couple of years, or you just don't have one. So it's a good year to need a center, and there's a lot of them available.
Yeah, Seattle's in a weird spot where they're at pick number 16, and they clearly don't seem to have interest in those quarterbacks, given their trade for Sam Howell, reworking Geno, which is fine, right? We're all curious about where Bo Nix, and especially here locally, Michael Penix, are going to fall, but I feel like 16 might still be too early. I don't know. Everyone's wondering if they're going to go with Troy Fautanu. Do you see as like a mid first round for him?
I like that a lot for them. You know, and I like that for him as well, because I think that he is a guy, the versatility that he brings to a team. I think a lot of people have thought maybe he's a guard. I think he can play tackle. I think he can play guard too. I think he can do kind of whatever you need him to do. But the athleticism and everything else that shows up with him on tape, you know, like we talked about, this is a really, really good tackle class. And I think he's right in the thick of it in terms of, he's a really unique mover. There are times that he's on tape running around and he still looks like a tight end, you know, or someone lighter than that even hit his size. So I really like him in the middle. And I mean, for a team like Seattle that, you know, is still sort of trying to figure out the interior of its offensive line and could use help, you know, maybe a tackle too. Who knows how it's going to go. Yeah. That would be a guy, I think, right in the middle there that would fit perfect.
You look at the top of these mock drafts, whatnot, you're going to see some familiar schools, right? Ohio State, USC, LSU, Georgia. Who's a guy from a smaller school that people should be looking for, man? Because I love those stories.
Mm-hmm. I was just looking at one, actually. Jalix Hunt. I think it's Jalix Hunt. Jalix Hunt, I always say the names wrong. From Houston Christian. He was a kid from Cornell. So he goes to Cornell out of high school, 6'4", about 215 pounds, 220 maybe was a big safety. Plays safety for 3 years, then transfers to Houston Christian, and they move him to edge. So now he's a 6'4", 260-pound-ish, 255-pound edge with super long arms. He's really fast for the position. You know, he had great vertical and broad jump numbers at the combine. And when you watch him on tape, he's one of these guys. So many teams are looking for the edges that can cover as well, right? Guys that can drop in space and move around. This guy, there are times that they put him out in the slot, let him run with receivers and tight ends. He's really freaky, trying to learn the spot. But Houston Christian, you don't hear too much about that one, but that's a guy right there, Jalix Hunt.
At the top of your draft consensus board, which if anyone's wondering, very different than a mock draft. This is not this is not Nick saying these guys are going to go 1, 2, 3. But at the top, you got Marvin Harrison Jr. You've got one of our favorites, Rome Odunze, Brock Bowers, who's a really fun guy. You've got Joe Alt in there. Of course, Caleb Williams. When you start looking at the top guys, when you're just looking at, like, this is the best talent, this is the most exciting talent, who do you think could transition most easily to the pros in year one?
But to me, it's still Marvin Harrison. I think that, you know, and you mentioned a couple others, Odunze, Bowers, Malik Nabers, those guys right there. And I think Caleb Williams and Drake May, you know, take those guys off to the side. But Marvin Harrison, to me, is the best all-around football player in the draft. I don't know if he's going to do anything at Ohio State's Pro Day either, and I don't think it matters. I mean, when you turn the tape on and you really watch it, how many different ways Ohio State tried to get him open and did, how many times he had to adjust to poor throws, how many times he had junk defenses thrown at him, and how many times he was able to solve all this stuff just almost effortlessly. He's one of these guys who looks like he's gliding when he's playing, just sort of a natural player. I think the best comparison really is his dad. You know, obviously Marvin Harrison Sr., terrific player forever. But this is a guy who I think could fit into any offense. He can play either side. He can play the X or the Z. He can line up in the slot. He'll block if he needs to. Team guy. Everybody there at Ohio State likes him a lot. So to me, he is the guy that's like the highest floor, right? The guy who's like, you can't miss with him. We're talking about he could go to 4 or 5, I mean, at this point, if the quarterbacks all go. So someone could get a heck of a football player with Marvin Harrison if he slides.
Now, we are on the west side of Washington, so there's a lot of UW love. But my Cougs got a guy out there, man, Jaden Hicks, the safety out of WSU. What are you hearing about this young man? What's his NFL profile looking like?
I like him. I think he's right in the mix with, you know, a couple other guys, Kellen Bullock, Kinchins from Miami, Blurred and the other kid from Georgia, Tyke Smith. He's right in the mix there for maybe the second safety off the board. I think that you look at, you know, his size, he stands out for a lot of people. He also jumped well at the combine. And I think he's had really good agility numbers too. So you look at him and you say, okay, he can play probably either side. He can play your strong safety or your free safety, so he can go deep or play up in the box. I think he's got enough agility to, you know, be a more versatile coverage piece than maybe the rest of those safeties in the class. It's a sneaky good safety class, but I think he's one that's definitely toward the top of that. I don't think anyone's going to go in the first round this year safety wise, but Hicks, Newbin, and, you know, maybe Kinchins would be a guy that I would be talking about on second round, but no later than third for sure.
We're talking with senior writer for The Athletic, Nick Baumgartner. He is a draft expert. And Nick, one of the topics for the Seahawks outside of offensive line has been the defense. I mean, they were one of the worst teams against the run last year and one of the worst teams the year before that. It just is not an area where they've excelled. Defensive line has been an area of focus. Now, they brought back Leonard Williams. They've got Dre Jones. Right. So they've got their starters, but it's just been this assumption for a couple years, Nick, that, like, well, they got to make the defense better. They got to step up defensively. In the first round, is this a good round for linemen? I feel like I hear about guys like Byron Murphy that could be drafted higher than expected.
Yeah, like, he's the one. I mean, he's the one that I look at it for Seattle a lot. And it's not out of the realm of possibility that he goes before Seattle comes off. You know, if Seattle just sticks and picks right there and doesn't trade down, which I think, you know, they could trade down there in a spot there that they could move down too. But Murphy's the guy that I've looked at for them a lot because I think he could definitely be there in the middle. And he has got some of the uniqueness to his game and frame and everything that we saw. I'm not going to say he's the same player, but he's got some of the Aaron Donald uniqueness to him in that he's squat and low to the ground and plays with just terrific leverage at all times and is super, super explosive. A lot of power, a lot of speed and get off, and is just a really unique rusher who could play really either spot inside. If you're going to, I know Mike McDonald's new there in Seattle, and he does a really good job. You know, I was around him a lot here. I'm in Michigan, so I was around him a lot for the 1 year. He does a good job of coaching to the roster, coaching to the talent. But I mean, I think Murphy's the type of guy that you could do anything with him. It wouldn't really matter. He could play, you know, even or odd front. He could do anything inside that you want him to. I think he could probably even kick out and play a little bit of edge if you wanted to go heavy with an odd front. So he is the one guy that I look at. I don't know about Newton there. I think that's a little early for him. But Murphy would be the one that if they want to stay there and go defensive line, I think he would be a fine pick there.
Nick, you had a little write-up on Keenan Allen and how it affects Harbaugh during the draft. But that just leads me to talk more about Chicago and the Justin Fields and Caleb Williams situation. Mm-hmm. I heard RG3 say something crazy. He says, look, man, if I'm Caleb Williams, I'm trying to force my way out of Chicago. There's no way Chicago's going to let him get out of there after trading Justin Fields. What was your whole take on that situation and how quickly the value of Justin Fields declined?
Man, I get where RG3's coming from, right? Because, I mean, I think the situation with Fields, when we look back, and yeah, Fields and Caleb are not the same prospect. Fields had a lot more questions about his game. And I think Fields is probably closer to what a Jaden Daniels would be maybe right now, or a McCarthy in terms of the full evaluation. But he goes to a team that wasn't ready for him. He goes to a team that's misaligned, in terms of GM and coach. And their roster just wasn't good. They didn't have a very good offensive line. They didn't have a good run game. They had nothing to support him. And he was a quarterback that was going to need, you know, that support. So I think that, you know, the fear, and again, they're still sort of misaligned with coach and GM, and everything's been always weird there forever. But the fear, again, is that, you know, have they done enough to support what is going to be a young quarterback in a very critical time in his career? And I think they have. I think they actually have drafted pretty well. They've made some weird decisions, but they've also made some pretty shrewd and pretty good ones, much better than what we saw prior to Fields. But I get the skepticism because, you know, the Bears have, you know, they're the one franchise still that's just gone forever and ever and ever without a consistent presence at quarterback, and it's their own fault. I mean, it's a lot of misalignment. And, yeah, so we'll see, you know, what shakes out there. But, you know, Fields, I think him dropping is as much a result as of the situation he walked into, needing help and time, and it just fell apart on him. I mean, if he can go somewhere and get his feet under him, compete a little bit more, learn, and, you know, find a way through again, I don't think we're going to be talking about a guy that's a bust in a couple of years. I think we'll be talking about a guy that may be redeeming himself.
Interesting. Hey, can I take a step back to a question? You mentioned, you know, Mike McDonald, kind of your exposure to him while at Michigan. What are some of your impressions? I mean, we're also just getting to know him. What can you tell us?
Yeah, he's a really interesting guy. You know, a bit nerdy, I think, in a good way. I think everyone made fun of him a lot.
I could sense it.
A lot of his dad jokes. Yeah, there's a lot of very dry humor. I could sense a lot of that, or that was always the bug on him. But I will say this. He really, I think, blew people away early on with how flexible and just open to everyone's ideas and sort of things that they did not expect that, I don't think, from him. He came from a system that was known for, you know, we do things a certain way here, Baltimore, but he's a very creative person who I think a lot of the guys really got to know him and really liked him. He did so much for Aiden Hutchinson that year, and I think really unlocked a lot of his game. And then that was the really thing with him that made me illustrate the point I said earlier with, like, he'll coach to the roster, whatever you have there. I mean, he rebuilt their defense in 1 year. And changed everything. I mean, everything Michigan just did this past season and won a national title, that's still more or less Mike McDonald's defense that they put in a couple years ago. So he is a very, very smart, I think he was in business in a former life or something like that. I don't think he did not play college football. He's a business type guy that I think has tried to get out of football before, but it gets pulling him back in, and he's a interesting guy. I think that was a really good hire and a good fit there for Seattle.
One of the best college football quarterbacks in all of the land is not getting a lot of love. That's Michael Penix over here in Washington. I mean, I understand why, right? It's the injury history. Yeah. People are concerned about that. He did put together two great years. What type of pro do you think he's going to be? Because, Nick, I think he might be a guy, you know, get picked in the second or maybe third round, but that can really help a football team. What are your thoughts on Penix?
Yeah, I think so much with him, and I agree with you because of, I mean, the perseverance and the, you know, leadership and all the stuff, the toughness, finding a way to make a play, you know, and I think he's a guy who got smarter and better as he wore on in college there. Everything that you said, you know, obviously shows up on film, but he's a guy that if the team that he goes to, you know, has help around him, I think that, you know, he could surprise people because he's a winner. He's consistently proven that in multiple systems. I mean, I was in the Big or around the Big Ten when he was at Indiana. You know, he played and performed well in games they had no business playing and performing well in. And when he left, it was proven to be kind of a mirage. So I think he's a really, you know, impactful guy who I think impacts the locker room. I think there's a lot more behind the tape with Michael Penix that teams are going to have to look at in terms of, you know, what kind of player is he. And I think they'll be surprised, and not maybe not surprised, but like happy with what they see there. So I think it depends on where he goes. You know, he and Nix are the two guys that I look at and say, you know, boy, they've won a lot of games and they really play well. And there are things that you can look at and say, that's not what, you know, you know, the middle of the field stuff, the confidence over the middle. But, you know, at the same time, you know, there's a lot to like there and maybe probably more to like than to dislike. So it wouldn't surprise me if he goes to the right spot and he grinds his way through and is a guy that maybe a team falls in love with and he takes off from there.
He is Nick Bumgardner, senior writer for The Athletic. Nick, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. I mean, it's fun. It's sunny out here in Seattle and we're talking about the draft, getting excited, and you've been so fun to talk to. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Hey, well, it's freezing cold here in Detroit, so I mean, I'll take the warm for the phone.
But, we'll send the sunny energy your way. Thanks so much, Nick.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, guys.
Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, much like myself, after too many hours on Amazon, the Niners have found themselves in a financial situation. What is it, and was it worth it?
That's crazy. You and my wife have a lot in common when it comes
to
that.
There are 40 things in my cart. Mm-hmm. I will not buy them, but if I see something, I just add to cart.
I'll mess with my wife and delete some stuff sometimes.
That's sneaky. That's betrayal.
Just see what she's going
to
do.
It's hard to find those things. Sometimes you get the right one and you have multiple sellers and you get the one that's going to be there on that date. That's messed up, Bump.
I feel bad.
Yeah, you should.
I'll stop doing that. But the Niners are in a financial situation. There was a clerical error at the end of 2022. So this has all been found out now. And what is happening now is in 2025, they'll lose a fifth-round pick. In 2024, their fourth-round pick, instead of being, pick 131, is now 135.
Clerical error?
Yeah, so someone messed up the books,
pretty
much.
Is it a clerical error or is it a clerical error? Heavy wink.
Heavy wink. That's what I think. Because we see the moves that the Niners have been able to make over the past few years, and I go, them and the Rams, everyone's like, how are they doing this?
Yeah.
This is how they're doing it, low-key. We'll see if the Rams get caught up on anything. But then I go, all right, what happened in 2022, man? Was it worth this clerical error, air quotes? All right, so in 2022, they signed Deebo Samuel to a three-year deal, $71 million. Mm-hmm. And then they signed Chavarrus Ward to a three-year deal, $40 million. And then Brock Purdy got a performance pay of $248,338. Just those moves alone, you lose a fifth round, and your fourth round this year is bumped back four picks. I go, completely worth it if I'm the Niners, man. You lock down Deebo Samuel, we'll see what happens there. You still have to sign some other guys, but it all made sense. I saw this headline, and I go, there you go right there. Whoever's working the books did a good job, but not good enough. Messed up just a little bit. Of course, the Niners are denying any wrongdoing, and it might have just been a slip up. But it made too much sense. The Niners making moves, the Rams making moves. If the Rams come out with a clerical error, then we'll have another conversation.
Second down. How have the Chiefs been able to soften the perception of being one of the worst teams when it comes to facilities?
They're trying, all right? Because what do we know about the Chiefs? And there's a player survey. The locker room was garbage. Treatment of facilities was whack. Team travel was messed up. The stadium is old. So President Mark Donovan came out and said, look, I'll move these guys, okay? But the Chiefs don't get an extension on their sales tax exemption, which will finance the building of the stadium, a remodeling of the stadium. He's saying they are going to leave. They ain't going nowhere. Ain't no way you're leaving Kansas City. But I like the pressure that he's applying and putting it out there. Like, look, we could do some things with this money. Just financially, we're not able to do it, man. We need that sales tax extension to get going. So this is him working the public. It's not going to be a big news over here to us because we don't really care about that stadium or the locker rooms. You guys are winning championships. Cry me a river.
Right.
But to the people in Missouri and the perception of that organization, this is what you do. You get out there in front of it. Apparently, there are commercials being ran in Kansas City right now with Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes asking people to go out there and vote and make sure they take care of the organization. But I saw this and I go, good for you, because the Chiefs did not have high marks when it came to how their organization is ran, yet they are still winning. The most important product are the guys on the field and the coaches, but you got to take care of them. You know, Mark Donovan, keep spinning this thing. Good for you.
Third down. You picked a team you think is dominating free agency. How have they done it, and how can they continue to do it?
It's the Pittsburgh Steelers, in my opinion. You got Patrick Queen over there. You signed Russell Wilson. Obviously, you have Justin Fields. You have a plan for this year and possibly a plan for the future. But also, they might sign Mike Williams, and I really like that over there, man. You talk about Rich getting rich. You already got George Pickens over there. Van Jefferson is a good number two receiver, but I think a healthy Mike Williams could really help Russell Wilson. He would have three legit starting receivers over there with two really good running backs in the backfield, and Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren. obviously on defense, you got your guys. You signed Patrick Queen as well. You got Minkah Fitzpatrick, Joey Porter Jr., a lockdown corner. The Steelers are back. Unfortunately, they are in the toughest league in football. So Russell's going to have to do his thing. But we talk about just a team going from a 10-win team that we didn't believe in to a team that you feel is going to be able to throw hands with anybody. I'm looking at the Steelers and I go, all right, man, you go ahead and get Mike Williams. You're looking a bit more better.
Imagine if in 2018 I was like, you know, Russell Wilson and Mike Williams are both going to be playing on the same team one day, and it's going to be the Steelers. Like, what? How's that going to happen?
I swear.
That's weird. Fourth down. There's a new Seahawk, so what are your thoughts on Seattle signing guard Tremaine Ankrum?
Tremaine. So he's only had 3 starts in his career, and I listened to our read what Tremaine had to say about coming to Seattle. He goes, look, he feels like there is an opportunity to play out here. You look at the guards who are on the roster right now. You lose Damian Lewis to the Panthers. You got Anthony Bradford. You have McClendon Curtis. And you have Phil Haynes. I'm looking at this O-line room, and I'm saying, all right, it's a little thin. Don't have really too many big names in this offensive line room. So I'm looking at the number 16 pick, and Troy Faltano looks even better now. But competition, you're bringing this guy in to compete. So because you're bringing a guy in who only had 3 starts last season to compete, lets me know that you're probably going to swing for the fences when it comes to offensive line. I hope this is the case. I'm looking at Troy over there, UW, and he is the man. Nick talked about him a little bit 15, 20 minutes ago. It's looking good. So this tells me that competition is wide open at the guard spot. There are some guys you expect to compete. Obviously, Anthony Bradford is going to lead the charge there, but Phil Haynes has been here for a while. They just brought in our guy, Tremaine. We shall see what happens from the Rams. He said he loves the way that the Seahawks competed, even the Rams. Did we beat the Rams last year once? It seems like we always lose.
I think we were swept by the Rams and 49ers.
Yeah, so the Rams got us late in the game in L.A., yeah, and then they blew them out in week one.
Yeah, all bad.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rams, for your contributions. But Tremaine, man, it means it's wide open. We shall see. But this also tells me, man, you got to look at the guard during this draft. Pick number 16, go get him.
I did agree. I thought it was really encouraging to hear Nick say that center could be deeper than people expect, especially like if there's early day 2 picks. Mm-hmm. Seattle does not have an early day 2 pick. They would need to trade back from 16 for that. I also wonder, and you've talked about this before, if they take Troy Faltanu, let's say they don't move him inside, but they take like a tackle at 16. What about Abe Lucas? Like, does that mean that knee injury is more chronic than we think?
Abe is good. He's good to go.
Okay.
I know.
I'm so curious about what they're going to do there. I'm feeling offensive line for the first pick.
You got to look at the interior line. You drafted a center last year. You'll see how much he's developed, what you depend on. But I think it's the guards, man. You got to go get a guard. Go get Troy and Tremaine. Come in here and compete.
You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up next, a $100,000 reward for an NCAA tournament game that you might actually be able to get right. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It's The Timeline on Bump and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see and hear about on your own timeline. It is time for the NCAA Men's Tournament. Thursday starts all of those games, at least the one Washington is going to play. It's going to be a 7:05 tip for those two between number 7, Washington State, and number 10, Drake. And you're going to hear that play-by-play, by the way, right here on Seattle Sports. As you know, one of the big fun things to do during this time of the year is to fill out your bracket. It is impossible to guess correctly. I remember like one time picking a 15 seed upset or a 14 seed, and I felt like a prophet. Like, I was like, I am a genius. You never get it right. We always have a million and five. One of your final four teams gets knocked out way earlier. It messes everything up. I get it. However, there's a new opportunity here, Bump. For all of you people who are horrible at filling out your bracket, you have a chance to make some real money because Pepsi and DraftKings are offering $100,000 to someone who can get every tournament game wrong. If no one's able to get all 64 games incorrect, the winner will be whoever has the most picks that are wrong.
Now, when you hear, you think, I can do that. I never get them all right. I can get them all wrong. Mm-mm. That's going to be harder than what people think. I guarantee it is going to be harder than what people think. Because just like you choose the right upsets in the first round. You pick all the higher seeds to win. Someone else is going to upset. It is going to be more difficult than people think, but I appreciate Pepsi for keeping things interesting. I'm definitely going to try to make the weakest bracket of all time and try to get this 100K.
Long Beach. Is it Long Beach State?
Long Beach State.
Yeah, that's what
I'm
going to
have them winning it all. Don't fence, Curtis. I'm sorry.
No, I think, well, there's only ever been two 16 seeds to win a game. It was UMBC and then Fairleigh Dickinson last year.
No
so
offense,
I feel
Purdue.
Like,
and the Boilermakers are much better this year.
Yeah, well, and I feel like if you have a 16 seed going all the way, that's probably the safest way to try and get this 100,000.
But then what? I'm going to bring up a NCAA men's. The hard thing that you're going to run into isn't the 16 over the 1, which is the most obvious thing you can do, or the 14 or the 15. It's the 8 and 9.
Games.
Yep. Yeah. It's going in and looking, not even 8 and 9. Like, you have some teams that are underseeded that are, you're going to be like, oh, I'll choose Auburn. Auburn's like pretty good. Like, there are teams in here that are, yeah, you're going to avoid going for UConn. You're going to avoid. And even then, like, Houston could be upset. You think you're going to avoid it, but I'm telling you guys, this is
it's tougher
much
than
harder
think.
Than you think.
8-9 in the East is Florida Atlantic against Northwestern. Even the 6-11 BYU game, you got, it's going to be tougher than what you think, but it's going to be fun, man. It's a different dynamic, and I'm all for that, man. Keep it interesting.
Yeah. We got to take South Dakota State out of the East. Let's see. Obviously, I'm going to be taking Long Beach State.
Vermont over Duke.
This is kind of a fun challenge, though.
Oakland over Kentucky.
See, where I'm going to get stuck is, what do I do about Michigan State, Mississippi State?
Exactly.
I saw someone write MSU.
Just to cover all their bases.
Or like, what am I going to do about even 6 and 11, Clemson and New Mexico? I don't know. You never know.
I believe
Dayton, Nevada.
New Mexico is actually favored over Clemson in that.
Yeah, like I'm just saying, there's some here. Honestly, like Oregon could upset. You have
Oregon I don't think they've ever lost in the first round.
And they're an 11. I picked them in my actual bracket.
Oh, you already filled one out?
Yeah.
I got to do mine today.
Well, you guys need to get on this. Anyway, so that is, someone said, what about the Coug game?
Wally always trying to star some stuff, man. I will.
I did out of kindness pick the Cougs.
Out of kindness.
Over Drake.
It's going to happen.
Okay. Drake's real hot. Real hot. But I'm also not listening to Drake as part of a protest.
Good for you.
Speaking of Washington schools, we now know how much Kalen DeBoer is getting paid at Bama and how much he turned down from UW. He's going to be making an average of $10.875 million per year, which makes him the fourth highest paid coach in the country behind Dabo, Kirby Smart, and Lincoln Riley. Also paid over 10 are Steve Sarkisian, who Texas was able to corral and keep, Mike Norvell, who Florida State was able to keep. Those guys were reportedly in the running, along with Dan Lenning for the Alabama job. So they all got their money, too. UW reportedly offered him a contract that starts at 9.4. If you are a UW fan, you're thinking, so you took from 9.4, it wasn't enough. You took 10.8 to go to Bama. Well, it's $1 million. And something tells me that that Kalen saw that as an opportunity he couldn't say no to.
It's an extra milli in Alabama. I was just
per
in
year.
Alabama.
Per year.
Yeah, and it goes a long way. And it's Alabama. It's the pinnacle. It's one of the six jobs in the country that every college coach would want. You have an opportunity to win a national championship every single year. So it's deeper than just the money. The money definitely helps, but it's the resources, the connections, the networks, and the recruiting process.
The recruiting process is a big part of it. I think when people look at it and go, like, I think that there is not every Husky fan, and I say this as a Husky, but like, there is this feeling, I think, that some of my brethren have where it's like, but we're the most obvious choice. And it's like, do you know how much easier it is to recruit to Bama?
So much easier.
Like, do you know how much easier that path is? Yes, that pressure is insane. I would not want to follow in the footsteps, play into that shadow left behind by Nick Saban. It is not a job I would ever.
Yes, you would.
It would be terrifying.
Nah.
I am not a naturally competitive person.
Not if you're one
Kalen
of the top
DeBoer,
coaches. Yeah,
you're
doing that.
Then you're a different kind of person.
Okay. How's this?
Okay.
Who do you idolize in this world that we live in?
Oh, I used to love listening to Dan Patrick. I think Kay Adams is
great. So you're telling me right now, if ESPN was like, hey, come follow up Dan, or...
Oh, I would know that I would get...
It?
I would be afraid to.
Nah.
Taking over for this job with people who like retired or moved into other jobs.
Nah.
Was people were getting upset about it.
Let me be your agent. I believe in you. Let's get it.
I'm just saying that is an incredibly intimidating world to enter into. That being said, if you could make it work, the opportunities there are more plentiful than at Washington. And I hate to say that to my fellow dogs, but like the reality is that.
It's a win-win. You're going to get paid. And even if you get kicked up out of there, you still go to another university that's going to pay you a good amount of money and you'll continue your career.
Yeah. Let's see. Next story. Yeah, we got some time for a couple more here. Clemson has filed a lawsuit against the ACC challenging the league's grant of rights, which they say hinders their ability, Clemson's ability, to meaningfully explore its options regarding conference membership. Basically, Clemson saying, let us go.
Pretty much.
ACC also running into trouble retaining their members.
Clemson should go independent.
They're asking for an open relationship.
Yeah, they're saying like, okay,
things
what
are to the things are so toxic. They're yes. like, I just want to see other people.
They're like, what if just for football, we just for that time of the year, we saw the SEC. Like, how would you feel about that?
Yeah, open it up. I mean, people are doing that these days a lot more often.
Well, did you see the exit fee that the ACC would make? Very like weird. Clemson and Florida State have to pay. It's like $140 million. That's insane.
Wait, for an say exit that one more fee, time, Curtis.
The ACC, because they know that Florida State and Clemson and North Carolina and Duke kind of run that conference, they're like, okay, you want to leave? Pay us $140 million. That's an absurd number of money to get out. That's like 2 years worth of a Big Ten TV deal that they're asking for from these schools.
I do think that when people were talking about Florida State, I know that you mentioned this, but one of those issues being that, like, they can blame their conference as opposed to the fact that they lost a quarterback for not being in a college football playoff. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just saying. I don't think it's true. I'm just saying it. ACC's been getting some hate and blame for a minute here, and I think
well, and
we could have seen
you
this
look
coming.
At like Cal and Stanford, their decision to join the ACC. I mean, they went from one deflating life raft to another. Like the ACC is probably
air.
A little bit more air, but it's still going down.
Yeah, but if Clemson leaves too, like oh god, it really is. It is just evolving into exactly the conversations we were having a year ago with people of being like, there's just going to be two leagues.
It's going to happen. I gave it 8 to 10 years.
That's the thing. I think it's going to happen much sooner than we think.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be D1, those two leagues, and then there's almost going to be this separate, like, lower division. I know there already is, but I think there's going to be this intermediary of, like, D1 schools that aren't part of those leagues but are still D1 programs. I feel like all of this is changing so much more quickly than I expected.
I like
it's
it.
Going to be like
keep switching
this.
It up. Keep switching it
you
up.
You like it?
We got the short end of the stick at Wazoo. I'm trying to blow this
whole
thing.
Wazoo's trying
Joker
to find a
style,
home.
Yeah. Setting a pile of money on fire, saying some men like to watch the world burn.
I'm watching it. Throwing gas on that thing.
Next up, Jon Rahm's Masters Championship dinner menu has been revealed. It looks really good. Forgive my pronunciation. Let's see. You have for your tapas, your appetizers, a Spanish omelet. You have albaricos, acorn-fed ham and pork. Boring, boring, boring. Let's get to the good stuff. First course is a salad, also boring. Here we go. Ribeye is the appetizer. Or you can have Rotoballo. I am just bumps.
They
just
have the English translation
this.
Underneath.
I know, but I don't know what turbot is. What's turbot?
She's been doing Duolingo. She's trying to put it
I
to
know.
Work.
I know. It's Rotoballo. What's turbot?
I don't know.
Is it like seafood?
Well, just giving me TurboTax.
Boil. That's chicken.
No.
It's fish.
It's fish? Okay. Yeah. It's a large left-eyed flat fish. Okay, so you can have fish with white asparagus, boring, or you can have ribeye with some peppers. Okay, you have a puff pastry cake with chantilly cream for dessert. You can have a crab salad for your first course. Can I say something controversial? I take back what I said. This is not a good menu.
It is a good menu.
Is it?
Yeah, I like it.
I mean,
it's fine. For everybody.
It's fine. It's fine.
Any menu that has I'm on it.
Sure.
You got to roll that R.
I'm sure it's going to be delicious.
Double L, yeah,
I'm on it.
Yeah, if it has a I'm sure it's going to be delicious. Ribeye and fish would not be either of my top choice for
surf and turf.
Yeah. Yeah, but not the surf and turf that I want. I want like steak and lobster. Mm. You know?
I'm feeling it.
It's going to be delicious. No, it's going to be better than any dinner I can ever afford.
When I qualify for the Masters next year.
Oh, right.
I'll let you guys know.
What would be your two main courses on your Masters menu when you win?
Ooh, steak is one for sure. But then I got to cater to the other side. I have like a vegetarian option, I guess. You know, make sure everyone's taken care of.
Mine would be, I would have DiGiorno pizza as one of the
DiGiorno.
You're getting bumped there.
Hating on DiGiorno.
What do you mean I'm hating on DiGiorno?
No, you were when I said the pizza's bomb.
Well, no,
DiGiorno.
No.
It's not delivery.
I'm going to explain. I have to hit break. I'm explaining myself in a couple minutes. Hang on.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
It all begins on April 8th. Put yourself there. You're crafting your perfect menu because you've won last year's Masters.
Colin, can I do something?
Yeah.
Welcome to the Masters. Every year, the greatest golfers in the world come together and always wanted to do that. Thank you, Matthew.
I would like to defend myself before I explain my perfect Masters menu. I did not say DiGiorno wasn't good.
You did.
We said, what is your favorite pizza? Like, where would you get pizza? And like normal people, Curtis and myself chose places where you go out, you go there, you order it, it's delivery, whatever it is.
Overrated.
You chose, out of all the places in the world, mm-hmm. DiGiorno. That's why I made fun of you.
I see the vision.
No, stop
but
it, Curtis.
But then you just put DiGiorno on the Masters menu.
I was just making a joke. I would not put DiGiorno on the Masters menu. I have more class than
serious.
That.
You were serious. I saw you write it down on your notepad.
No, I didn't. I wrote down something else. I'm ready for are you ready for mine?
Yeah.
Appetizers. Charcuterie board. Who doesn't love that?
Mm.
Also buffalo wings.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Salad, Caesar, everyone's favorite salad, get out of here, ranch. Main course, penne alla vodka, one of my favorite meals on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Also a nice pulled pork sandwich.
Like
real, you know, like a brisket kind of thing.
Yeah.
I would like to say, I wondered why ribeye, like I said, what about steak and lobster? Someone said ribeye is steak. And I said, oh, you're right. I thought it was ribs.
Also, brisket is beef.
It's beef.
It's not pork. Yeah.
Whatever. We'll figure it out when we get there.
You said you wanted a pulled pork sandwich with brisket.
Okay. But maybe can I have more than two choices? Can I have brisket and pulled pork?
Should we do what cut of meat is this?
I'm not going to know any of these answers. If you're like sirloin, okay, from a cow, presumably. I couldn't tell you where. I couldn't tell you why. Dessert, I said creme brulee.
Don't know what that is.
It's like a delicious custard.
They got one of those like blowtorch things.
On the top so you like crack through it.
Yeah.
Or
it's
cookies and cream pie.
Mmm.
Right? That's a good menu. That's a good Masters menu. It's better than John Rahm's. No offense, John. Congratulations on winning the Masters.
John eats fancy. He's rich, you know?
Exactly.
And he's from
Spain, got that golf money. Yeah, exactly. He's
from España.
He's got better taste than I do. I'm trash, okay?
Barcelona.
He's from Barcelona. What is your Masters menu?
It's going to be Thanksgiving in that piece.
Stop.
It's going to be Thanksgiving. It's my favorite food.
Are you serious?
Thanksgiving food. Mac and cheese. Coleslaw, stuffing, ham, turkey. I don't even like turkey, but my kids like turkey, so they're going to do that.
You're going to have Thanksgiving in April?
Yeah, but it's America. All right?
Whoever wins picks the entire menu, and no one can say no.
This is America, John Rahm. It's America. It's Thanksgiving in April. That's what
we're
serving.
The idea of Bump's menu immediately following John Rahm. This is America, and therefore, we are having Thanksgiving meals.
I'm going to have fake pilgrims walk out and everything.
Okay.
We're going to get into it.
I actually don't mind that at all. Like, that's actually a great idea for a menu. As long as there's also stuffing/dressing, as long as there is also pecan pie, can I just request those? I know it's not my menu.
Yeah,
I didn't win the Masters. I didn't put in the work. You know what I mean?
It's all good.
Curtis, what would be your Masters menu?
Let's go appetizer, mozzarella sticks. You can never go wrong with mozzarella sticks. Everybody loves those. And then for a main 206 with a great idea. And I love this. Now, Shellfish Bump, I know you're out on, but they say a crab boil, which I would be all about.
Ooh,
clams, mussels,
dumping
scallops.
It all over
yeah.
the table
yeah,
in front
dump
of
it
these
out.
Prestigious.
Get, like, this butcher paper, you're in some like cabin in Georgia
they give
somewhere.
Them all dole out these giant bibs.
I would love that as my main. And then dessert. Costco has this chocolate peanut butter pie that is incredible. It weighs like 5 pounds. I would definitely have that on the menu.
Hear me out. Taco bar, but it's like 1990s
Del
at
Taco.
Home taco bar. No, where everyone gets like 4 hard shell tacos and they have to line up and go
can
through with like the
Rosarita
driest
beans.
Yeah, pinto beans, the driest beef you've ever seen in your entire life,
shredded cheese from the grocery store.
Yeah. And they have to take it out of the bag. It's not even in a bowl. You have to reach into the bag with your hands.
They have an oven where you hook the hard shell tacos on the like grates in the oven to warm them up. Yeah, that'd be great.
Someone said buffalo wing sauce all over the green jackets. Who doesn't like buffalo wings?
I love it.
I think that's a great
but
menu. I think yours is a better idea. Yours
here's
is a cooler idea.
You gotta keep it at least somewhat classy, I guess.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
It's the Masters.
Tiger Woods had like milkshakes.
Yeah, somebody
did
recently
he?
Had like burger
I'm
sliders.
Tiger Woods yeah. Masters menu. I don't know which one it'll actually
I know
give me.
Somebody was hating on his
okay,
menu.
Okay. So he, in 2003, he had a great menu. It had steak, sushi, delicious things. But he does have one where it was like
Scotty Scheffler last year, cheeseburger sliders, firecracker shrimp.
Yeah.
He had steak and blackened redfish. So he had kind of, and his dessert was a warm chocolate chip skillet cookie with milk.
Danny Willett in 2017 had roasted potatoes and vegetables, Yorkshire puddings. I don't know what that is. Something tells
He's
me
British.
It's meat with gravy. Apple crumble for dessert. Gross. Mini cottage pies.
Dessert's
I don't want
to
know what that is. Jordan Spieth had a delicious Texas barbecue style. Okay, fine with that.
Bubba Watson, Caesar salad, grilled chicken breast with a side of green beans, mashed potatoes, corn, macaroni, cheese.
Confetti
That's a pretty,
cake.
Pretty
Bubba Watson
one.
Had confetti cake for his dessert. Phil Mickelson had a Spanish themed menu with paella and filet mignon. Delicious. They also gambled all day. I'm just kidding.
him and Bruno Mars.
Okay. In 2004, Mike Weir, did I say that right?
Mm-hmm.
Had wild boar and
wow.
elk.
Wow.
Wow. I'm just ordering a whole bunch of panda.
Yeah.
Bring panda, orange
panda
chicken.
Panda Express.
All that good stuff.
All right. We're done having fun now. We're getting to the Mariners. Mariners insider Shannon Dreher joins us next.